Welcome to another episode of PhD BNM, Beyond the Lab. Today we'll explore the fascinating world of epilepsy. Let's begin! Today we're going to talk about some things that connect us, epilepsy, both in the lab and in the clinic.
We are four PhD students of biomedical and neuromotor sciences working in different areas of epilepsy research, from drug monitoring to genetics and neurology.
We'll share our personal experiences, what we're studying, and the challenges we face in this field.
So let's get started. But first, let's quickly introduce ourselves.
I'm Chiara, a pharmacist in my second year of PhD. I work on therapeutic drug monitoring, especially with the Innovate microsampling devices.
I'm Giulia, with a background in pharmaceutical biotechnology. My project focuses on MRF, a rare genetic disease that causes epilepsy.
I'm Eleonora, a biologist working on Lafora disease, a rare and progressive form of epilepsy. My work focuses on identifying biomarkers using a multi-omic approach.
And I'm Anna, a neurologist. My research is about improving pre-surgical evaluation in people with drug-resistant epilepsy using EEG. So Chiara, tell us what led you to focus on this neurological disorder.
I joined the neuropharmacology lab a few years ago and collaborating with the Epilepsy Center at the IRCS. I was involved in several projects aimed to optimize epilepsy treatment. What really impressed me was see how complex and diverse this pathology is, and the idea that we can simplify patients' quality of life motivates me.
Yes, your point of view is inspiring. Epilepsy is the most frequent chronic disabling neurological disorder, and it can have a huge impact on people's quality of life. Some people have to wear protective helmets to avoid injuries during seizures. Others face serious limitations in their work or social lives due to the stigma, even with simple things. One girl told me, for example, that some beauty salons refuse to do intense full light treatments on her.
As a clinician, Anna, can you tell us how does epilepsy manifest itself?
Epilepsy is very roughly defined as a condition where the brain is prone to having seizures, but it's way more complex than that. There are different causes and it can show up in a variety of syndromes. The clinical spectrum is super wide. Some syndromes are self-limiting and go away as the person grows. Others are caused by genetic mutations and can be progressive and very severe. So you might meet someone with epilepsy who looks completely fine, or someone who also has intellectual disabilities or struggles with the daily independence.
Okay, so since epilepsy manifests itself in a very variable way, our project can contribute to improve the diagnosis. Do you agree, Eleonora?
Yes, even though genetic diagnoses are significantly advanced, determining the underlying cause remains challenging for certain types of epilepsy, potentially restricting treatment options. A genetic diagnosis does not always equate to therapy existence. This is especially evident in rare epileptic disorders such as Lafora disease. Despite its well-characterized genetic basis, no definitive cure is currently available because of the limited understanding of its pathophysiology in humans specifically. Identifying biomarkers and key dysregulated molecules would not only expand the current knowledge, but also provide valuable tools for monitoring disease progression, improving prognosis accuracy, and ultimately identifying potential therapeutic targets. And this is from the molecular point of view, but Anna, what about the clinical side? What's the EEG role in this?
EEG plays a key role in epilepsy. It helps confirm the diagnosis and figure out what kind of epilepsy we are dealing with, whether it's focal, coming from a specific area in the brain, or generalized, involving the whole brain at once. Sometimes the EEG shows patterns that are typical of certain epilepsy syndromes. With focal epilepsy, EEG can even help pinpoint the lobe of the brain where seizures are starting.
This is really fascinating. In addition, in epilepsy with both neurological and a systemic component, like Lafora disease, linking clinical tests such as EEG and MRI with molecular data could give us a better understanding of the disease pathophysiology. It would help to identify a progression pattern between the nervous system and the rest of the body, ultimately improving diagnosis and treatment choices. And talking about treatments, which drugs are used and how do they work, Chiara?
One of the critical components of epilepsy treatment is finding the right drug. The choice of drugs depend on the type of epilepsy. Current treatment mainly target on neurotransmitter systems involve the seizure activity, such as GABAergic and glutamatergic systems. Today, there is a broader range of anti-seizure drugs available, and they can be grouped into three historical generations. The first generation, introduced in the early 20th century, includes drugs like phenobarbital and phenytoin. The second generation showed a better tolerability and fewer drug interaction, like lamotrigine and levetiracetam. And the third generation, which included newer molecules with more specific mechanism of action and an improved side effect profile. These most recent drug approved and introduced to the market are still quite new, and its mechanism represent a step forward in terms of precision medicine. These ongoing developments highlight just how dynamic and evolution pharmacology is in this field.
That's true, Chiara. However, I want to remember that there are still some diseases that cause epilepsy for which treatment is not available yet. For example, Murph disease is still lacking a cure and efficacious drugs. This is the principal reason why we are preclinically testing novel therapeutic strategies in vitro, starting from the patient cells.
That's interesting, Julia. But which are the limits for the current therapies?
I think the most important limit in finding new therapies is the lack of knowledge of the pathological mechanisms directly causing the disease. Knowing the mutated gene for the specific disease, for example, is not sufficient for fully understanding how the physiological mechanisms are disrupted. This is why it's difficult to find drugs or substances that directly target specific proteins involved in the pathology.
I totally agree with you, Julia. I think we're moving toward the same goal, just from different angles. You're working on the preclinical side, and I'm more on the translational end, using patient-derived samples. But in the end, it's all about the same thing. The more we uncover the disease mechanisms, the closer we get to an effective treatment. Like Lafora disease, for example, since it's a glycogen storage disease, the ketogenic diet seemed like an obvious option to try, but it didn't work, and we're still not exactly sure why. Then last year in Bologna, we tried a fusion enzyme on 4 patients, and it was supposed to cross the blood-brain barrier and clear out the polyglucosan buildups, but that didn't really go as planned either. That's why finding reliable biomarkers is more important than ever, and it could really change the game.
As a clinician, I often deal with people who keep having seizures despite trying 2 different anti-seizure meds, suffering a condition that we call drug-resistant epilepsy. At that point, adding more meds usually gives just temporary relief, and the chance of becoming seizure-free drop a lot. So, Chiara, do you have some insights on why some epilepsy forms do not respond to drugs?
Some forms of epilepsy don't respond to drugs because the underlying mechanisms are either not fully understood or are particularly complex. In these cases, seizure persists despite the use of 2 or more appropriate drugs at the right dose. These are several possible reasons for this, and in some patients, the drugs don't reach the right concentration in the brain, maybe due to the issue with absorption or metabolism. In other cases, the brain cells might develop a sort of resistance, often involving changes in drug target or increased activity of protein that pump the drug out of the brain.
That's where epilepsy surgery can really make a difference, by removing the specific brain region where the seizures start. For people with drug-resistant focal epilepsy, this can often lead to seizure freedom and even stopping meds altogether. But coming to the main point, which are the challenges that are still open?
Talking about challenges, MRF is an example to explain why it is so difficult to find cures for some diseases. Other than not knowing the specific pathological mechanisms occurring in MRF patients, another step of difficulty occurs. The disease is caused by a mutation in a gene present in the mitochondrial DNA, and in this specific case, not all the mtDNA copies are mutated. The percentage of mutated mtDNA copies in the cells is what is called heteroplasmy. There is a threshold of heteroplasmy over which symptoms occur, but this can vary from patient to patient. As you can see, it's not so simple to deal with this situation, also considering that it's difficult to maintain cells in culture at high heteroplasmy. Indeed, the less mutated cells are selected in each passage due to their higher resistance to stress. In addition, the lack of animal models for the disease makes the preclinical testing challenging. Despite these difficulties, we are trying to test different approaches on patient-derived 2D and 3D cell models. Patient cells from skin biopsies are reprogrammed into induced pluripotent stem cells, from which neuronal precursor cells and cortical organoids are generated and differentiated. In particular, the next treatments we are planning are based on gene therapy. Some proteins called nucleases can cut and degrade any DNA of interest. In this case, nucleases targeting the mutated mtDNA sequence have been already experimented on less specific cell models, and my job will be to test them on our cell models, hoping to see an increment of wild-type copies and a subsequent amelioration of the phenotype.
Right, so still open challenges. And how many days do we have to cover this topic? Just kidding. Anyway, from my perspective on Lafora disease, I'd say the first challenge is recruiting a sufficiently larger cohort of patients to analyze and monitor as the disease progresses. Being an ultra-rare disease, there are only about 300 confirmed cases worldwide, scattered across the globe. Of course, some countries have a higher prevalence, like Italy, where there are around 30 patients, but the point still stands. This means there are very few studies on Lafora disease in humans, and the available ones in the literature lack consistency in terms of clinical examination and research protocols used. Consequently, most of our knowledge on this disease comes from in vitro and on animal model studies, and what is actually known about pathophysiology in human is greatly limited to the absence of translational studies. My project has the ambitious and, to some extent, the daring goal of bridging this gap, or at least going in that direction, through an integration of transcriptomic, proteomic, epigenetic, and genomic analysis on blood. Other significant complication is having to study the neurological component without direct access to the brain tissue. I will get closer to it by studying extracellular vesicles and cell-free DNA in the cerebrospinal fluid samples, even though it is an indirect way to assess the pathophysiological mechanisms of the brain. And the results will still be groundbreaking, as currently molecular studies are only done on models.
Wow, I see your research is about microscopic processes underlying epilepsy. From a microscopic point of view, my project focuses on improving the pre-surgical evaluation in people with focal drug-resistant epilepsy. In some cases, assessing whether someone is a good candidate for surgery requires intracranial EEG recording using depth electrodes, a technique known as stereo-EEG monitoring. The idea behind my study is to compare the performance of scalp EEG and cerebral EEG, also with the help of advanced signal analysis, including connectivity measures based on graph theory approach. Scalp EEG gives us a broad surface level view of brain activity, while stereo EEG offers very high spatial resolution from inside the brain. Also, by recording scalp and intracranial EEG at the same time, a method we call inside out, we hope to study how seizures begin and spread from both a local and a global perspective. The insights came from this project could help make surgical treatments more effective, by allowing us to tailor them even more precisely to each individual patient.
My research is most focused on the what happened after the drug is chosen, specifically on how we can monitor its effect in a more personalized and patient-friendly way. I work on therapeutic drug monitoring, which is essential for ensuring that each patient is receiving the right dose of drugs. Some of these medications have a narrow therapeutic window, meaning the small change in blood concentration can make a big difference in terms of effectiveness or side effect. The innovative part of my project is the use of microsampling devices, which allowed us to collect just a few drops of blood from a finger prick instead of the traditional venipuncture. This is not only less invasive, but also opens the possibility to use it at home, monitoring followed by the lab analysis. Patients could take their samples and send them to the lab, reducing the need to go to the hospital visit and improving their quality of life. The goal is to combine therapeutical drug monitoring with a digital health solution like mobile apps or remote data tracking to build a more adaptive and responsive treatment model. In the future, I see this kind of approach being integrated with the artificial intelligence to help clinicians make real-time decisions based on dynamic patient data.
As a take-home message to anyone thinking of getting into this field, I'd say stay consistent, be patient, stay determined, and always work with a collaborative spirit.
And with that, we wrap up today's episode. Thank you for joining us on this journey. Stay tuned for more episodes of PhD Binembe and Lab. Until next time.
Bye.